Creation Move podcast. My name is Zoe, and this week I wanted to have a chat about how your watch and the feedback that your watch gives you might be impacting on your mindset and psychologically how you're approaching your running as well. Now, I'll mostly be talking about how it works on Garmin because that happens to be the tech cult that I worship at. But it's going to be pretty similar across devices because they're using the same kind of data. And so, and you can control like the feedback that you're getting and you can choose to ignore it or not. But it's good to sort of have an understanding of where it comes from and when you should take it on board and when you should not take it on board and, you know, how it might impact on things along the way. So probably there are probably three main things that you might use your watch to give you information. And that is going to be, if you have a chest strap like I do, then that might be HRV, which is heart rate variability, which is in general a really good tool for endurance people to get a read on their recovery. It's not so useful if you are a power athlete or a strength athlete, so it is much more related to people who are in that endurance area. So it can still be used to kind of rate, you know, sort of stress levels of other people, but it's probably much more suited to runners than anyone else. And the other two are probably going to be the VO2 max estimate and also the performance condition. And for those, they are probably some of the ones that are going to be have the most variables involved, which also probably makes them the more complex of all of those three. So performance condition is sort of looking at your pace, your heart rate, and your heart rate variability. So for starters, if you aren't wearing a chest strap, then your HRV is probably not going to be that accurate off the wrist. And the other thing to keep in mind is oftentimes, like you might notice this happens to me a lot, is if I have a big session, 9 times out of 10, the performance condition will say that it's poor. And there's a good reason for that, is that oftentimes before you do something that's going to be hard, whether it's like a workout or a race, your body will elevate your heart rate to get you ready for what you're about to do. So an elevated heart rate before you do something like that is actually a good thing, but that is not something that performance condition takes into account. So I do find it a much more accurate measure on easy runs than on workouts, because the amount of times that I've had like performance condition is awful and then had a really good workout is a lot. And a lot of times when it will say like performance condition is good, like before an easy run, that's usually because I'm better rested. And or if it's poor, it's because it's sort of like more of a recovery day. VO2 max is similar in that it uses a range of formulas, but predominantly what it's using is how your pace relates to your heart rate to determine what that VO2 max is. So in perfect conditions, it's probably a pretty good measure. And it's definitely something that, you know, like tends to work to look at, you know, like as far as trends go. You can expect it to go up and down based on the type of workout that you're doing, because it's obviously it's going to be different if you're doing like an interval session with lots of rest in there as opposed to a continuous session, because your heart rate and your pace are going to be impacted by that. But what it can't take into account is other conditions that are going to impact on your pace or on your heart rate. So for example, I will often have do like a moderate intensity run, which is sort of designed to be high zone 2 or low zone 3, after having been to the gym, and that's going to elevate my heart rate more than if I just got up that morning and went for a run. And so oftentimes then that's going to slightly lower my VO2 max estimate when I do that. Another aspect is obviously weather, and you'll notice that your VO2 max looks quite high in winter when you're in perfect conditions, and or at least this winter is perfect conditions here. Somewhere else autumn might be perfect conditions, and then in summer, particularly places like here where it is super humid, that is really going to impact on your effort level. But it's not something that's taken into account in the formula. So it's just natural for your VO2 max estimate to be a bit depressed during that time. And then I guess the other thing, which I didn't mention before, was on the Garmin Connect app, but there's like a training status thing. I think it's even on the watch as well, which is a combination of your load, as in the work that you've done, and your VO2 max estimate. So if your VO2 max is trending up, and then you will tend to be productive. If it's trending down, it might consider you to be, and your load has also gone down, it might consider you to be in recovery. If it's gone up, but your load has gone down, it might consider you to be peaking. But also for all of those reasons that we've talked about with those, how it's estimated, it can also be wildly off depending on what is happening. And generally speaking, because you need to be recording outside for the VO2 max, if you have a period where you can only run on a treadmill or you're not running, that's going to impact on that status. So when I had a period of not running due to injury, that was like no status for months and months and months. So it is definitely sort of skewed to reflecting outdoor activities. Now, the problem with taking some of those things as sort of gospel is that, one, they're estimates, two, they can be inaccurate, and three, they should never replace your own judgment about how you feel. So I think that they're great tools in terms of sort of like, in terms of things like calibrating. It's a bit like heart rate zones, in that heart rate zones are kind of there for you to get a sense of what something should feel like, but it should never replace your own judgment as to how you feel. So there have definitely been times when I've been doing sort of like a low intensity run, my heart rate monitor has said like 180 beats per minute, and it's just wrong. Like it's not true. And I'm running along at a jogging pace. So I at no stage then go, oh, I better slow down even more, because I know how the effort should feel and I know that the effort is fine. But it's great when, say, I'm doing something that's sort of like a moderate intensity. I go, I think I'm in the right zone, but let me just check my heart rate. Heart rate says I am. That's a nice sort of confirmation. And particularly when you've got changing terrain, I can kind of go, okay, I know this moderate run is supposed to be at around, you know, like 160 beats per minute. And so I can just follow that rather than trying to guess what the pace should be if I'm going uphill or downhill or whatever else. So it's really useful in that way. But I think the benefit is helping you to learn what your effort levels are, rather than replacing your judgment, which I think is the risk with something like that, because it's not, there's not like a causal link. Like, you could have had a fight with one of your kids before you go for a run, and that's going to elevate your heart rate. It could be humid, and that's going to elevate your heart rate. It could be windy, and that's going to elevate your heart rate. And some of those things are increasing the effort level, and so it's sort of still fine to go along with that heart rate. But some of those things, like just general stress, that's not actually increasing the effort level. It's just elevating your heart rate. And also sometimes it's just going to be inaccurate. Like, sometimes it just goes off the boil, and, you know, like, you'll be running along at a fair pace and it still thinks you're like barely walking. And you've just got to be able to, you would hope that, you know, like, all the times that you've done it and it has been working, you have a good sense of your pace, and you're just able to then kind of tune in to what the effort level is for you. So because I've been doing it for a while, I can kind of pretty easily work out like what it should feel like even when the heart rate is off. So I know that zone one for me is like, that's either walking or it is super, super cruisy running. Like I do not feel like I'm running by any stretch of the imagination. It is very, just very relaxing, and I'm definitely, you know, like it's not, I'm not sort of pushing the pace in any way, shape or form. And zone two is similar. It sort of just depends on probably whether I'm in zone one or zone two, probably depends on the day, you know, like how much recovery I've got to do. But zone two is still very easy, could hold a full conversation with no dramas. But say in zone one, I could probably comfortably breathe through my nose and run. Whereas zone two, that's probably not going to happen. I am probably going to do like mouth breathing for that to still feel really comfortable for me. And then zone three for me is like increased effort, can still talk, but I feel like I'm running. Like I can feel the muscles working. I can feel that I'm needing to, you know, breathe more deeply. And I'd probably, you know, like it would probably downgrade me from full conversation to where I would be slightly adjusting what I was saying so that it wasn't going to be, you know, impacting on the run too much. And then zone four, which is sort of your tempo threshold zone. So that is starting to feel uncomfortable but manageable. So definitely working quite hard. I'm definitely breathing hard, but it's controlled breathing. And I could still talk in short sentences. It's probably around about, you know, in the sort of like 10K pace to half marathon pace type zone. And then above that is like much, you're getting into much more of an interval pace type territory, where it's going to be, you know, you're only going to be doing shorter efforts beyond that. So that's the idea of using the heart rate, is to help you find that so that you could use it when it's not working, and to use the heart rate more as a confirmation rather than a guide. Now, the problem with how it impacts on you is the risk of, say, like, say, for example, in the morning you get up and you do your HRV and it's like high, and, you know, ideally you're going low, and how much then that impacts on what you believe is going to happen in that run today can be problematic, because there's a whole, you know, like, I've certainly done, like on the, one of the days when my HRV was really high, just because I think it was sort of like fighting off a bug or something was happening. I did it in the morning, it said like 90, and I did it in the afternoon and it said 42. So even when you get a high reading, it's very changeable, you know? So that for me was more like, okay, like I might be coming down with something. So just be sort of aware of that in terms of, you know, like making choices about that day. I had a workout, I tried the warm-up and I did not feel good, and I probably would have been okay if it had been an easy run, but it wasn't. And high intensity stuff will absolutely sort of like open the door for getting sick if that's a possibility. So I just decided to stop after the warm-up and go home and, you know, see how I felt the next day. But the important part of that is not allowing that high reading for me then to talk myself out of that workout, because I sort of tested it, I confirmed, okay, this is a bad idea, and I came home. But there's loads of times when it's been high and I've gone to do a workout and it's been great. So it's, I do it more to just to make sure that my recovery and sleep is on track. And when it starts sort of trending up higher, I'm like, okay, like I might want to make an adjustment here, rather than it having an impact on individual workouts or convincing me that I'm not going to be able to do the thing that I'm supposed to do that day. And it's similar with performance condition. That is 100% the kind of thing that I completely ignore, because usually it can be sort of, it can be, I find it can be pretty good in terms of, like, it will be low when I really need a recovery day if it's an easy run, or it might be higher if I feel like I'm recovering well. But oftentimes it will be, say that it's really low when I'm about to do a workout. And it's just the kind of thing that if you're a bit nervous about doing something, something like that can just get in your head and you're like, yeah, I'm not feeling good. I'm not going to be able to do this. And my fancy watch has just confirmed that I'm feeling a bit crap, and this could very well all go quite pear-shaped. So it's very easy with that kind of information for, even if it's not, that's not an actual narrative that happens in your head, for it to kind of be a little thing to kind of like talk yourself out of doing something before it's even happened, or to give you a sense like, I'm not recovering well, and, you know, like, I'm doing too much, when that might be the case, but it also could very well not be the case at all. And 9 times out of 10 for me at the moment, like, the performance condition is 100% related to how humid it is. It'll be like low and like, nope, it's just more humid today. And it'll be like, this is, you know, it'll be like really high and improved amazingly. And I'm like, nope, it's just less humid today. So for something like that, if you think that it is something that is going to impact on your confidence in any way, just get rid of it. You don't need it. I think that as a person who likes stats, I tend to keep it on there, but it's also one of those things where I know it doesn't mean anything. So it's a bit like how, you know how there's a, like, you can get like a move alert on your watch if you've been sitting still for ages. And I don't think it's actually switched on my current watch, but on my last watch it was, and I kept it on purely for comedy value, because I would like go out and do like a hard workout and be like, have done like a 20k run and like an hour later it would be like beeping it to move, and I'm like, hell no. So some things I just find that like to keep because I find it amusing. But if it is something that is anything that would sort of like impact on going into something and feeling good about yourself and good about your body and feeling strong, then definitely get rid of it. Not worth it. And the same goes for VO2 max and training status, which are very linked to each other, being based primarily on VO2. But again, it's an estimate. So what you would get, and I think that the studies that they've done of like that estimate versus what you would get in a lab are pretty close. But obviously in a lab, things like humidity are completely controlled, and, you know, like wind and, you know, going uphill and whatever else. And so although I'm sure that the formulas are quite complex and nuanced in a lot of ways, it's also just good to keep in mind that they are impacted by things. So, you know, like, I don't know, like maybe a week or 10 days ago, my VO2 max said 49 and yesterday it said 53. And, you know, in winter it has been up as high as 56. So do I think that my VO2 max has actually improved in that time? 100% no. It's just a variation. You know, it's a bit like weighing yourself through the week. You know, you can vary by, well, I have certainly varied through a week by 3 or 4 kilos. So, and approaching it the same way is that you're kind of like looking at trends over time. You're not looking at like that number right then. So, you know, like, and it's the same with the training status, is a lot of the time it will just sort of fluctuate based on, you know, like what you're doing and, you know, and what that sort of, what that VO2 is doing, and, you know, like what your load is. Like sometimes you might have had to have like a few days off running outside with weather or whatever else, and so no actual fitness changes have happened, but it suddenly views it as your load being lower, when it, maybe it hasn't, because maybe you've been doing other things instead. So if I go into my training status on the app over the last month, there's a range of like productive and recovery and maintaining, and there is like this large area of unproductive from the 19th of January to the 30th of January, which is a kind of a long time. But I bet if I went back and looked at the weather, it's because I was running in feels like 35 degrees over that period of time. So the main thing with training is not just doing the work, but also believing that the work is going to get you to where you want to be. And if your watch or any data or any feedback that you're getting is going to undercut that confidence, then it's better to just get rid of it. Because a lot of the time, you believing into something and buying into it is going to directly impact how successful it is. So you want to get rid of anything that's going to cut into that. Now, obviously, you don't want to go around blindly believing something that is going to work and it's, you know, completely ineffective. But for the most part, when you are committed to doing something, you've established that this is something that's going to work for you. It's either worked really well in the past, or you believe in the philosophy and the philosophy is backed up by all sorts of other things. And for the most part, you just need to strip back anything that's going to cut into that. And it's a bit the same how I was talking to Deb the other week about how, like, when you go into a new nutrition plan, just getting rid of any kind of other theories about nutrition for while you're doing that, because you don't want to undercut the process. For the process to work, you have to commit to it and be consistent with it to see if it does work. And having all of those, you know, there are always going to be loads of ideas about training, loads of ideas about nutrition. And for the most part, other than a few outliers, for the most part, they're all right. It's just different approaches. But for any of them to work, they need to be consistent. And for them to be consistent, you need to be 100% committed. And for you to be 100% committed, you need to be confident in what you're doing and not have this kind of second guessing thing coming in from either other people or your watch or whatever else. So there are a couple of things that you can do to sort of cut into how it impacts you. One is obviously getting rid of it so you don't see it on your watch or in your app or whatever. And another thing that you can do is, like, maybe you still like the stats, you realize that it's a lot of the time it's highly variable, sometimes it's even bullshit, and, you know, but there is a bit of you that is a bit like irritated when that, like, performance condition says it's low, or the training status says you're unproductive or you're overreaching or whatever it is. Then I think that there is this thing that tends to happen, which is called confirmation bias. So if you have an idea, your brain will latch on to everything that confirms that idea, and it will discard anything that doesn't confirm that idea. So that's the reason why when I bought a car, like, after my car was in an accident, I bought a Mazda 3, and then I saw them everywhere, all the time. Were there more Mazda 3s on the road? No, I was just all of a sudden noticing them. And it's a bit the same with things like this, is you will tend to kind of, like, say, for example, if your performance condition says low, well, performance condition said low and then I had a crappy run, but ignore all the times where performance condition was low and you had a great run. So if you are going to take on those stats, then really go all in on sort of my watch is recording that I'm unproductive, but I'm actually going to write down how I felt about it as well, because my opinion is worth a lot more than the piece of equipment on my wrist. And all the research backs this up, that there is still no measure that is better than how you feel. And so, you know, and a lot of times you don't know how you feel until you start. So, you know, it's just not worth trying to sort of second guess that. And I think a lot of the time too, if there's something that we're doing that's going to be slightly scary, you're kind of like always looking, because like the before bit is the worst part. So you're always looking for that thing that's going to tell you this is going to be a good run or this is going to be a crappy run. So whether that's what your HRV says in the morning, or what your training status says, or what your VO2 max is, or what your pace is on your easy warm-up, human brain is just naturally searching for like what is going to tell me that this is going to be okay, and none of those things can tell you that. So you just got to kind of dive in and remind yourself of all the times that you thought it was going to go poorly and it went really well, or the times that you felt like it was going to go really well and it went to crap, and just remind yourself that you have no idea what is going to happen until you do it, so it could be great. Thank you for listening in this week. If you would like to support the podcast and get access to all of my bonus episodes, head over to Patreon and you can pick whether you want bonus podcast episodes or customized coaching or one-on-one coaching. You can check it out all there. And as always, just drop me a line if you would like me to talk about your question on the podcast. You can also book in to be on the podcast with your question too, if you'd like something a bit more in depth and something a bit more conversational. Because a lot of times when you have questions, they'll sort of come in without like all of the context that a conversation would have. So I will link up those things in the notes, and I will be back next week.